It's time again for the Scotty Johnny podcast with your host, Scotty Johnny himself, John Barnett, and the ego himself, Cheddar Talk, Aaron Flottam, talking Wisconsin sports, NFL through D3, college hockey, doesn't matter. Two mics, two crusty vets, two opinions, one based in reality and one based in what do you bet on Twitter, with music by Delete Great Cars and Trucks. Here's John and Aaron.
Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome into the Scotty Johnny podcast. I am your not-so-humble host, Jonathan Barnett. And with me, as per usual, is Aaron Flottam.
Hey, John, what's going on, man? I see there's another line on the call tonight. Is there somebody out there?
There is. We're not as so much per usual, but friend of the podcast, Andy Herman, is back with us today to talk Packers.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, guys. Always fun talking with you, and I'm sure this will be another rousing, fun episode. Can't wait.
We're always obviously very grateful to have Andy join us, somebody who you know watches film for real and for money in some cases. So you can always catch him.
He actually watches the All 22, where we just pretend we do.
I watch it at times. That's all I can say. I was like, I don't have as much time for it, but when I can, it's really great. I'll tell you, I watch All 22 of High School on Huddle quite frequently, but much less interesting sorts of things going on there.
As the intro to our podcast addresses, mine are all just opinion based, so I don't watch anything. But that's why I'm glad we bring in Andy once a year to clear things out and put some fact into this show.
Yeah. So Andy does work with the Packaday podcast. You should definitely be listening to that. I mean, sometimes it's hard to get to it every day, but they're putting out content every day. It's great stuff, and they have great guests. Also, is it Packer Report 66 and with Green Bay Nation? What else am I missing?
Yeah, those are the main things. I appreciate that. The only other thing that I do is I do a weekly podcast with Tony Pauline as well for Pro Football Network, who's also doing great stuff.
Yeah.
And it's really fun to pick Tony's brain every week and get his latest news and rumors and everything else. So that's a really fun podcast that I get to do weekly where I kind of get to learn a lot. So that's something that I really enjoy doing.
It's like the opposite of this podcast where you just teach.
No.
Okay. Or just teach instead of just learning much from the rest of us here. All right, but we'll get everything started here right away with the part we call our main event.
Starting things off with the main event.
All right, well, main event is Andy. I guess that's where we have him on here for. We want to pick your brain, Andy. Told you a couple things we wanted to go over first off. Everybody who follows Andy, it's just Andy Herman NFL on Twitter. And if you don't, you should. He's got great things he puts up there all the time, just lots of content and lots of good video. A lot of the videos you've put up in the last several weeks, at least, have been a lot of stuff going over Jordan Love, and you've been very, very positive for this part. And I guess I wanted you to go over the things. I mean, I like it. It makes me hopeful seeing the videos you put up and the way you describe them. Are you cherry picking when you do those, and how much? I mean, like, what's your kind of way you're picking some of these videos recently?
Yeah, so great question. So if anyone follows me regularly and kind of looks at how I generally put together my analysis and my articles and a lot of the stuff that I put on Twitter, for the most part, my goal is to show you the things that I've seen on tape and allow you guys to kind of, you know, bring up to your conclusions what you want to make of it. I'm going to give you my two cents usually and kind of give you my tape, but I also want it to be out there for interpretation. And I think, you know, as you guys kind of mentioned, you know, you don't always have the opportunity to go out and watch the All 22. You know, everyone is busy. Everyone's doing a variety of different things. What I kind of like to bring to the table is to find out, you know, and go out and watch as much as I can and bring back to people the good, the bad, the ugly, the indifferent, kind of just what a normal play looks like. And, you know, let you guys, you know, kind of make some of those conclusions on your own. Because I think anyone will tell you who does this enough that nobody has all the answers, especially when it comes to scouting, you know, college players and seeing how they're going to make the transition to the NFL. NFL teams have millions and millions of dollars invested into this process, and we see the best talent evaluators in the world mess this up royally every single year. So for me to say, you know what, I'm the be all end all, I'm the one that knows the answer to this, there's no way. Now, like I said, I'm gonna give you my two cents and I'm gonna give you my take on it. While I showed in a lot of the positive clips came from 2018, and there were certainly some positive ones that I showed from 2019 as well, but I also put together, you know, two longer videos that showed all of Jordan Love's plays where he had turnover worthy plays as well, which there were a plethora of them. So again, I try to be, you know, as balanced as possible to kind of give both sides of the coin. But I, you know, in the 2018 tape specifically, when I went back and watched that, I'll be totally transparent. I was on cloud nine. I could not have been more excited, because when anyone, for the most part, that's doing the tape evaluations prior to the draft, they'll tell you they're getting to maybe 3, 4, maybe 5 games that they get to watch of an individual college player, because we all want to get to 200-300 guys, right? And a lot of us are covering the NFL throughout the season, or a specific team throughout the season. Maybe we're watching a little bit of college tape in between, but it's mostly going to be NFL tape. And then once the NFL season ends, well, in this case, we were what, end of January-ish? And then, you know, draft happens end of April. Well, you've got, you know, a few months to kind of cram as much as you can in. And I know, you know, groups like the Draft Network and things like that, they're, of course, doing it year-long, which is fantastic. But most other people, even NFL scouts, I was just reading a book. Crap, I've been reading so many, I don't remember which one it's from anymore. But, you know, I was just reading a book where one of the GMs told their scouts, they're like, watch for, you know, maybe 4 games and make your evaluation and don't overthink it. I want to know what you're thinking from those 4 games. So the reason I'm saying that is, you know, you get to about maybe 3, 4, 5 games for these players. I think I watched 4 or 5 games of Love pre-draft. And that's going to, you know, you're going to base your evaluation off of that. I got to one 2018 game pre-draft, and the rest were from 2019. And I had a pretty good feel for Love, but you know, recently I had the opportunity to go back and watch all of 2018, and I was just head over heels about what I saw on tape. I saw a player, you know, who could make every single throw imaginable. His touch and placement was well beyond what I expected it to be. You know, just everything that I wanted to see: the tight window throws, the mobility, his ability to be a weapon in the red zone. Everything that I wanted to see out of a top flight quarterback was there. And we hear so many times, and the story's been told of, well, Jordan Love is this prospect quarterback. It's going to take 2 or 3 years to develop him. And I think this connotation that we immediately get in our heads is, this is another DeShone Kizer, you know, or this is another one of these project quarterbacks that, you know, they have the raw tools, but, you know, in the NFL nowadays, they just don't work out because training camp's not the same, practice isn't the same, et cetera, et cetera. But with Jordan Love, it's totally different. This is not projecting what he's going to do at the NFL level. This is, I've seen everything on tape that he needs to be able to do, and he showed it as a true sophomore at Utah State, and that's what made me so excited. Now, there's a lot of things that he needs to clean up, and the turnover-worthy plays, the decision-making, and the reading defenses are really the things that he's going to have to clean up. But to answer your initial question in a really long-winded answer, no, I was certainly not cherry-picking plays, but I was definitely wanting to show some of the great things that he did put on tape as well.
I would like to bring up in that answer that we have found out that Andy Herman has, in fact, gotten a good grasp on Love at this point. So I guess my question then, I mean, it's a really softball question for you here, but like, so what you're saying is like every other team in the league and everybody else, and I mean, especially like the commentators and whatnot, the Mel Kuypers are just like you, just watching 4 games. But, you know, so 31 other teams only watched 4 games too, and maybe the Packers put a little bit more film study into him. I mean, because we kind of saw the same thing happen just 2 years when the Giants took Daniel Jones. Everybody lost their mind, and it kind of looks like maybe Daniel Jones is going to work out. Like maybe the Giants did a little bit more film study on him than the average team. Is that kind of what you're getting? Like, is that maybe what the Packers maybe the Packers took more time looking at him than everybody else did. It's kind of a sophomore question, but that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say that. I think, you know, these are NFL franchises that have all the money in the world to put in to get their time, effort, and energy into these players. And certainly when you're investing in these first round picks, you know, you have multiple scouts that are, you know, meeting him in person. You're meeting with him at the combine. You're meeting with him, you know, usually probably via Zoom or Skype in this case, you know, because of COVID. They have, you know, multiple scouts. The GM's going to watch film on him. So, no, I don't think that the Packers did their due diligence more than any other team on Jordan Love. But I think probably what the Packers maybe saw or at least felt, and we're gonna, only time is going to tell as to whether or not they were right, is that they felt that the 2018 Jordan Love was the real Jordan Love, and that the 2019 Jordan Love was more to do with the situation and circumstances, his coach being gone, five of his top six wide receiver, you know, pass catchers,
right,
being gone, his top running back being gone, the offensive line giving up, you know, you're having poor protection. So I think that it was just more of them having faith that, like when I said, when I watched the 2018 tape alone, I was blown away. I thought it's on par with any top five, you know, selection in any NFL draft, any top end quarterback that would normally get selected. If I had to match Jordan Love's 2018 film with Patrick Mahomes' college film, straight up one-on-one, I'm taking Love every single time. Now, there's a lot more that goes into that. Yeah. I'm not saying that Love is going to be Mahomes, but there's so much that's positive there.
Okay. I guess
you're not wrong.
No,
because KC took a little bit of heat for taking Mahomes when they did, if I remember correctly. But
yeah,
it was a risky play. He was going to be.
Yep.
It was the idea of the fit with you know, his coach there and Reed and everybody that they thought was probably going to be something that worked out better. But I guess my thing I was looking at with this is in terms of Love, obviously the 2019 season was a step backwards. I've seen some talk about, you know, you mentioned some of it too. Was it Gary Anderson, very well known to Badgers fans, came back and everything and changed several things about the offense. It seemed, and I don't know if this is something you necessarily, I don't know how much you can see on film in terms of that, but the play calling, it looked like in many cases there was single reads. Like he had a predetermined throw based on the offense, and it seemed like teams scouted that more. And I've seen people saying that. I didn't come up with that by myself necessarily, but it does look like it when I watch it then later. How much of that, I mean, the turnovers definitely went way up. How much of that was possibly scheme related and just tape being able to kill him based on play call?
Yeah, so a few different things. One of the things that I noted in my 2019 study is it looked like he was almost playing too fast. Like in 2018, he looked calm, he looked collective. And I just thought that he seemed more overall calm. It wasn't playing as fast. It looked like in 2019, everything just speeded up a little bit. And it looked like he was, I kind of wrote, and I wish I could actually have this back. I wrote that it looked like his release was too quick. I think his decision-making was too quick. And I think a lot of that goes to what you're saying, where I think he was just kind of having the one read and out, and it, you know, a lot of it worked. They had a lot of screen passes. They had a lot of quick passes, and some of that stuff definitely worked. But I think if he could just kind of slow down a little bit and just kind of run the offense and not have that predetermined read, I think that's actually going to do him well. I think that's going to work well within Matt LaFleur's offense. But I think the second piece of that is, and one of the other things that I noted is in 2018, you look at his stat line, you see what, like six interceptions, and it looks like this phenomenal stat line. And I think the story easily gets told of, well, he was great in 2018, and then this new system, this new offense came in 2019, and it kind of ruined everything. But if you look close at his 2018 tape, a lot of those turnover worthy plays were starting to happen in 2018, and they just didn't always get, you know, intercepted. They didn't complete the play. The defense didn't complete the play. They didn't pick off the pass. They didn't recover the fumble, you know, some of those sort of things. So you started seeing flashes of that in 2018. And then the hope as you're watching it is that in 2019, that's going to get better and he's going to improve with age and he's going to improve. And it, of course, it was the exact opposite. He took a major step in the wrong direction. And the last thing I'll say in regards to that is, whether it was the one read or not, especially the first, I would say, four, five, six games of the season, that offense just looked disjointed. It didn't look the same. No one really looked totally comfortable. You could tell that they were running a new offense. You could tell that just everything was a degree off. Like I said, I think You know, Love was playing a step too fast. I think the receivers weren't always in the right place. The center was constantly making errant snaps. The offensive line wasn't on the same page. So there was just things around him that didn't add up. But I don't want to solely put it on that, because I do think you started seeing signs of this in 2018 as well.
Okay. Well, that's good. So I guess in Green Bay, obviously, we went from, you know, Favre to Rodgers, and the big thing everyone says is, wow, we're just, you know, one Hall of Famer to another. But the best part is looking at the massive roller coaster we've had, from somebody who had absolutely no fear of throwing interceptions to somebody who was terrified of it almost. Is just Love just a middle ground maybe that we could have? Just,
yeah, he'll, you know, that
take
would be,
some risk,
be nice.
But not all of it.
It's so weird because he doesn't seem like a middle ground of it. He seems like the best of Rodgers and the worst of Favre, almost in one quarterback, like at the same time, like simultaneously. And there's this like Jekyll and Hyde where it is 2018. Legitimately, there are so many plays on tape where that's Aaron Rodgers. Like that's not Jordan. Like there's one play. I'm going to go over one play in specific. He has a hard count, draws the defense off sides, gets the free play, and then it takes the shot down the field, doesn't settle for the 5 yards or the quick pass, takes the shot downfield, and then at the end of it, you know, completes a pass that had no right being completed because he put it in only the spot that the receiver could catch it. The receiver makes the play. He had 3 touchdowns on drawn offsides plays, on shot plays. Wow. In 2018 alone, as a true sophomore at Utah State. And I'm watching it, and I posted one. I said, who the heck am I watching? It looks like it's Aaron Rodgers. It legitimately looks like it. And then in 2019, you watch, and some of the decisions that he's making, I'm like, man, this brings me back to watching Brett Favre and you having to go like, what in the hell was he possibly looking at? There's like 5 plays in 2019 where he just throws the ball right to the middle linebacker, like right in his numbers, like just never sees him. And you're just like, you see him read defenses. You see him complete these crazy throws. You see him do everything right. And then he just, you know, hits the linebacker with a softball in his numbers. And it's like, it's those two things that make Jordan Love such a unique prospect to try to figure out, because the good is so good. And then there's plays like that, again, kind of bring you back. So it would be great if it was kind of a middle ground between the two, but unfortunately it's almost like a little bit of best of Rodgers and worst of Favre kind of rolled into one.
I'd like to have
that's,
you and
that is very interesting.
Yeah, I'd like to have you and Paul.
I'm having number 4 flashbacks right now. And I'm getting the sweats.
I say I want
maybe you. It's because I'm sitting in a hot garage, but that's, yeah.
So I'd like to have you and Paul Noonan just hash this out, because he's been definitely very sad about the whole thing. I was with him on draft night, and he was a very angry recording that happened. It was great. It's good watch though.
Sure.
Moving on from Love, the next thing that I kind of want to get into is
we should never move on from Love. We need Love more now than ever.
We're gonna keep studying Love. We'll get our doctorates in Love.
Hopefully we have 20 years of Love. That'd be great.
Love always wins.
Yes.
J-Lo and A-Rod.
Yeah. Were you on the point of that one? Andy, do you own that one or did you get that from someone? I always wanted to ask that.
1,000,000% owned it and it was mine. And a couple people like tweeted and said like they had it first or whatever, that had like 10 followers, like
yeah,
1,000,000%. So what happened? And you, somebody can actually go back and look at this.
I stole it from you. So yeah,
somebody said something to me. Oh, here's what it was. So somebody said, we need a nickname now for Jordan Love. And I responded back. I said, well, that's easy. It's J-Lo. And in like a minute, like a millisecond, I'm like, oh my God, A-Rod and J-Lo. And like a second later, so it's, you can look up, I have a reply to somebody about it being J-Lo. And so like awesome. A second later, I'm like, I tweeted about the A-Rod and J-Lo. I kind of thought that maybe it would like get a little bit, you know, not viral, but like at least Packer Twitter viral.
Absolutely. But the one of the other big things that we want to get to, one of my questions I wanted to talk to as well, is the offensive line, because the offensive line, we lost Bulaga, obviously.
Yep.
And I think that one kind of does is there's obviously the chances of kind of shifting a couple things around. I don't know, I guess, how they're going to set up the look here, if Wagner's going to be necessarily the right tackle, or if there's still the consideration that Billy Turner moves out to right tackle and they put in, you know, I don't know, one of the other guards that they got. I mean, even like John Runyon, who they just drafted this year, or someone like that. What are you thinking in terms of like the guys you watched on this offensive line and possibly the best ways of lining them up as they go, or maybe just what the strengths are going forward and where they're going to have to really, you know, who they're going to have to look through on this, I guess.
Yeah, so I have certainly been wrong from time to time, so take this for how you want to take it. but I would be shocked. I would be beyond shocked that barring injury, if the offensive line didn't go Bakhtiari, Jenkins, Corey Linsley, Billy Turner, and Rick Wagner. You know, could something crazy happen where they want to save money because they don't know what the salary cap is going to look like, and maybe they take a look at Corey Linsley, maybe, but I don't see that happening. But, you know, crazier things have happened with Josh Sitton and things like that in the past. But assuming that the same players are on the team that are on the team now, I would be shocked if it didn't go Bakhtiari, Jenkins, Linsley, Turner, and Wagner. So I fully believe that Rick Wagner is going to be the starting right tackle. I fully believe that moving Billy Turner to right tackle would be a nightmare. Okay. And I just don't think that there's really any other options. The only other thing that I could see is, you know, maybe Lane Taylor and Billy Turner get a chance to really battle it out in training camp. I just get the feeling that there's a comfort level with Billy Turner, and I feel like that's the type of player that they want across the offensive line. I think, you know, from a talent standpoint, I think the two are close, but Taylor was already in a rotation with Elgton Jenkins at left guard a season ago before he went out with injury. Like, they were rotating those two guys in and out, and then Taylor went out with injury, and then Jenkins took the spot. Yeah. Taylor went out for the year. And I just fully expect that that's going to be the same situation where Jenkins is starting at left guard, and now Taylor is going to be, you know, kind of the rotational guy along the offensive line. I think when you look at Rick Wagner, think back to week 17 in this against the Lions in the Seahawks game in the first or the divisional round of the playoffs, when Jared Valdir started those two games at right tackle for the Packers. Was he as good as Brian Bulaga? No, he was not. Did you notice him? Nope, you didn't. You know, he was totally fine. He was, you know, he's totally workable. You know, is he going to give up more pressures throughout the course of a 16 game season than a Brian Bulaga would? He certainly will. Is he probably going to be as good of a run blocker as Brian Bulaga was? Probably not. But are you going to notice it on a, you know, down by down distance? More often than not, you're not going to. And I think Rick Wagner, if you look at the course of his career, he was really a solid right tackle, not too far off from a Brian Bulaga caliber player for a good chunk of his career, and then kind of fell off last season. And who knows what the reason was that for, you know, for that was. But hopefully he can kind of bounce back and get back to more where he was earlier in his career, because he was a pretty solid starting right tackle for a number of years. And I think that's the type of player you're going to see. And again, I think it's going to be very much like Jared Valdir starting at right tackle. And I think it was a really smart signing, because you're not going to find very many starting caliber right tackles for that cost. I mean, those are usually $8-9 million. I mean, Billy Turner was a $7 million per year guy as a starting right guard. Now, he's a little bit younger, but that's a middle, you know, an average to below average starting right guard at $7 million a year for 4 years. You know, they get Wagner on the cheap to start at right tackle. And again, I think he's going to fill in. And I think really what it gives you the opportunity to do if you're Matt LaFleur is it allows you the opportunity to run your offense without having to consistently chip, use a tight end, use a running back to stay in. He's going to get beat from time to time. Aaron Rodgers is great at stepping up, especially at the right tackle position, because he sees it in his vision. He's going to be able to step up and step around some of those pressures. You know, and I think they're going to be able to survive with Rick Wagner at tackle. So I really like the signing. It's definitely going to be a decrease from what they had in Bulaga, but I think he's going to be just fine at right tackle.
Okay, so in terms of the three guys we drafted, though, you're thinking they're not even like the first rotational guy at any of these spots then, right?
No, I think Lane Taylor and Lucas Patrick will be players 6 and 7 across the offensive line. And then I think John Runyon is going to be your probably your eighth guy, who has some tackle guard, you know, flexibility as well. And I think if you have those three guys as your backups on game day, I mean, Lane Taylor's pitched in at left tackle in a pinch. He obviously can play left guard, right guard. I think he could probably play right tackle in a pinch as well. Lucas Patrick can play guard or center, left or right guard or center. And then Runyon can legitimately probably play, you know, across the offensive line, maybe not center. But then the great thing is that you have Lindsley who can play center. You have Patrick who can play center. You also have Elton Jenkins who can play center. You've got Billy Turner who could kick at left guard, right guard, or right tackle in a pinch. So, you know, you look at those eight guys and you've got your kind of five starters, you know, in there. You really don't want to lose Bakhtiari. I think Lane Taylor probably would get the first shot at that in a pinch, but that's the really the one that you can't afford to lose. I think everyone else you can kind of make do with what you have with Taylor and Patrick.
I think it goes back to like Ted Thompson type drafting too. You want guys who played multiple spots in college, so you have that flexibility. You only have so many linemen and only so much
for
depth.
Sure.
What were you going to say, Aaron? You had a question there too.
I was just going to ask Andy real quick. I know me and you have talked about this in the past, John, but I mean, I know the Packers burnt a second round draft pick on Jenkins. Did we have any clue he was going to be this good? Like, I mean, he's looking like he's going to be a monster, like legit, like not just a B plus, like he might end up being an all pro guard by the time he's done. Like he kind of came onto the scene a little quiet. And then next thing you know, what was it? 571 pass blocking attempts last year. Didn't give up a single sack. Like that's impressive. Like did we see this coming? And like when the Colts burnt up that first round draft pick on John, what's his name?
Quentin Nelson.
Yeah. Quentin Nelson, and everybody thought they were crazy, but he might be the best lineman in football. Like, what are your thoughts on Jenkins and like how he came around last year?
Yeah, so I think, you know, it's a really, you know, great perspective in bringing up Quentin Nelson in this conversation, because I think if you look at non-Quentin Nelson type players who is legitimately, and I don't use this term loosely, legitimately a generational guard. Like he legitimately has the ability to be a once in a generation type offensive lineman at guard. Outside of a player like that, you're generally not spending a top 15, top 20 pick on a guard. You know, those are generally kind of your guys we're going to find in the fourth, fifth round, try to plug them in, go a little bit cheaper. I think things have definitely changed, especially in the current NFL, when you've got guys like Geno Atkins and Aaron Donald and Kenny Clark and Akeem Hicks. Like there is a massive Fletcher Cox. There's a massive influx of talent across the defensive tackle position, and teams are able to get immediate penetration from the interior of the defensive line. And if you think about it, an edge rusher has to kind of go around. And even if they win quickly, there's still a path that you have to take to the quarterback. If you're winning inside and you immediately get past a center or guard, you're one-on-one right with the quarterback. So there's nothing that can disrupt a play more like, interior pressure from like an Aaron Donald or something like that. So guard and center have definitely become a little bit more of a need because of the current state of the NFL. But my bigger point here is, outside of a guy like Quentin Nelson, when you're spending a late first, early second round pick on a guard, you're expecting that player to be a really good football player. Now, that doesn't mean that you're going to get a Pro Bowl, if you're thinking like an all pro type level caliber player at that position, that doesn't guarantee that by any stretch. Jonathan Garnett was a player the 49ers drafted in the first round at guard, and he basically flamed out of the league. So it doesn't guarantee anything. Danny Watkins for the Eagles, same thing. But if you're picking a guard at that spot, you're probably feeling pretty darn good about it. Now, as Packer fans, I don't know that. I think a part of the scenario that played out is they had two first round picks ahead of Elton Jenkins. So Darnell Savage and Rashawn Gary got a lot of the publicity from that draft class. But right. Jenkins is what, a top 45 pick? And
44. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Top 40 or 44th pick in the draft, and was a very good player. You look at him coming out of college, his anchor was so incredibly good. I mean, the thing with Jenkins is that if you didn't beat him off the snap, he won in college. Right. You had to basically beat him quick off the line and get immediate leverage on him to have a chance. Because if Jenkins got his hands on you, it was 1,000,000% over. He just controlled you. He sat down and you were not getting by him. And I think he showed a lot of that in his first year in the NFL as well. I think teams kind of figured out a little bit in the second half how to attack him a little bit, use a little bit more speed, use a little bit more agility against him, not try to win in a phone booth. They used more tackle end stunts. And that was something that Billy Turner struggled with. And Jenkins struggled with it a little bit more in the second half of the season as well. So he still has some things to clear up. But no, I'm with you, Aaron. I think it was a fantastic pick, and he has a very bright career ahead of him.
I mean, I'm not down on Darnell Savage, and I think I think Gary has, you know, a little bit of room to grow yet. Plus, he's behind the Smiths, so I mean,
yeah.
But right now, he's kind of winning in that draft class right now. Like, those are three pretty solid draft picks right in a row there. Like, I think that's going to be a lot to build around for the future for the Packers. But
a million percent, and then, you know, to go get Jay Sternberger and Kingsley Keke and potentially Kadar Hallman. So Mark Eckel, my colleague at Packer Report, wrote an article today. And he talked to Hank Poteet, who I believe is a defensive backs coach somewhere. And, you know, he basically said that there are a ton of teams that would love Kadar Hallman and that he would be starting for other teams in the NFL in the league right now. So there's a lot of positivity surrounding Hallman as well. You look at that draft class as a whole, and I think there's an opportunity that Brian Gutekunst just absolutely crushed it.
Well, so hopefully we get that second year bump there and get some of these guys playing to that kind of potential. One of the guys we did add as the position that everybody wanted to add to, we got Funchess, but we also added Reggie Bagleton. You got to speak to him recently, you said, right?
Yeah, he came on the podcast, which was great. Really engaging guy. You know, he was so much fun to talk to. I definitely recommend anyone who hasn't had a chance to listen to that to go out to the podcast and listen to that episode with Reggie. Really great. You know, he just battled for everything to get to where he's at today. And you can tell, you know, the respect that he has for the opportunity that he was given. I think it's so tough to tell, you know, what type of player that he's going to be transitioning from the CFL to the NFL. But I know that there were, some in the NFL that thought highly of him and, you know, that thought that he could be, you know, a 35, 40, you know, catch player, maybe a number three, number four receiver in the NFL. So, you know, time will tell. I think he's kind of in that number six wide receiver conversation. I think the top five spots for the most part are pretty much taken with EQ, MVS, Funchess, Lazard, and Adams. And interestingly enough, I'll be totally honest. I've kind of written Jake Kumerow off a little bit. And the reason that I've kind of done so is I just feel like, you know, he's a little bit older now. He's one of actually the older offensive players on the team. Yeah. And he's kind of had two seasons to kind of do something with his playing time. And he's shown a couple flashes here and there, but I kind of feel like we know what he is now. And he's kind of more of just like a number five, you know, wide receiver. And I just kind of figured Green Bay would kind of have seen what they had and kind of go with a younger player to see if maybe they could hit gold somewhere else. But two different players, Tim Boyle and Alan Lazard. Tim Boyle and Alan Lazard, both in interviews recently, said that their breakout player this year that they expected to kind of break out in a big way was Jake Kumerow. So, you know, it's interesting the fact that you've kind of got your five guys that we kind of expect to make the team at wide receiver. You've got Jake Kumerow, who Tim Boyle and Alan Lazard are saying is a breakout candidate. And then, you know, you've got a guy like Reggie Bagleton. You still got a guy like Darius Shepherd. So I think the bottom, you know, portion of that wide receiver group is going to be really interesting. But, you know, from just talking to Reggie, I will say this. I would not count him out.
Interesting. Yeah, there's going to be an interesting spot down there towards the back end of that. That's going to be very interesting to see through camp. Bagleton's a guy, I mean, because I haven't seen him much yet. And it's going to be interesting to see what he's able to do. I mean, it seems like the biggest thing that Gutekunst wanted to do was draft monsters at wide receiver. He's got a lot of tall guys, and Bagleton's a 6 foot tall guy, but he's not like EQ or anyone like that. He's not one of the taller guys there. So it's going to be interesting to see him in here and what they do. I mean, it seems like they've got an idea of their offense now, and he, you know, was a guy they went out to go get. So it's going to be interesting to see some of these guys.
I'm excited to see what St. Brown's going to do, because he was kind of the one that we were all sort of looking at. I mean, I just think back to like last preseason, and that was the guy that we had, at least in my head, I had him ahead of MVS and Kumerow and even Lazard. You know, I was like, St. Brown, he's going to take that step this year. And then of course the injury. So I'm excited to see St. Brown. I think St. Brown's going to be a bigger impact than a lot of people are picking up on.
And of course, we remind everybody that there is no St. Brown. You know, there's a St. Paul, there's a St. John, but there isn't a St. Brown. Like, it's not a real saint.
Oh,
I don't know
where
the guy's name from.
Am I saying the player's name?
No, you got it right.
I've been known to do that before on this podcast.
point out that I don't even know how he got that name. There isn't a St. Brown, like the patron saint of bland clothing or something. I don't know.
Well, Jim Brown is the patron saint of the Cleveland Browns.
There you go.
Yeah.
So. Because that's all they ever had.
Equanimeous Tristan Imhotep St. Brown. One of the greatest names.
We can only be so lucky to have a name like that, right?
But his brothers are equally well gifted with names from his mom, who are like John and Mary St. Brown. It's so great. It's the best. The last thing before Andy takes off here and we move on to, you know, not Packer stuff. You sent out a tweet just today. You talk about how Tyler Irvin has never scored a touchdown, and this is the year it happens. I'll tell you, for Acme Packing, I wrote our pre-draft thing. I did a whole segment the year that Irvin came out on just pass-catching running backs that we might look at. I know Irvin and Josh Ferguson out of Illinois that year, a couple guys that I was looking at. Kenneth Dixon was the next year, or was he that year? I'm trying to think. I think he might have been that year, too. What's the reasons that you're going through making that is your calling your shot right now for Tyler Irvin?
Yeah, I just think, you know, if he gets the opportunity to hold the position as a returner, I just think we saw a season ago in limited time that he has the explosiveness to be the guy that kind of has the ability to break one and take it to the house. I think so many times, even with returners, they're either usually good at punt returns or kick returns. You know, there's the elite guys, Desmond Howard and, you know, Devin Hester and those type of players who are good at both. But for the most part, a lot of those guys are either good at one or the other. And I think the fact that Irvin's good at both really kind of makes him a unique player. And then the fact that they actually work to get him involved in the offense as a gadget type player as well. I just think that there's a lot of versatility there. Now, Irvin's in a unique spot. And I actually wrote about this in my article for Packer Reports for Tuesday. And, you know, Aaron Jones, A.J. Dillon, they're not going anywhere. It would seem very likely that Jamal Williams is still going to remain on the team this year. A lot of teams only keep three running backs. And even if they keep four, you know, there's still a Dexter Williams who they spent a sixth-round draft pick on. Taylor they got as an undrafted free agent. They got a Demarie Crockett who is definitely behind the eight ball. But it's not like Tyler Irvin is just a given to get this number four running back spot. Now, he's definitely the leader in the clubhouse. He would definitely be my favorite today to get that position. But I don't think it's just an easy given that Tyler Irvin has a roster spot locked up. But if he does, and if he gets on the roster, I just think that he has the flexibility on offense. I think he's got the juice as a returner. He can be used as a receiver out of the backfield. I just think at some point he's going to get the opportunity to be a player that can make some plays and you know ultimately end up in the end zone. So it's an educated hypothesis, but I like it, and I think it has a good opportunity of coming true. And I just think, too, you look at this season, assuming everything goes according to plan, which it's 2020, so why wouldn't it? I just think that the depth could become a much bigger, you know, issue as this season goes along for a variety of reasons. First of all, we already know that football is a war of attrition and everyone ends up hurt. And then secondly, you've got guys completely out of their routine. Who knows if a full training camp will take place? Probably a full preseason won't take place. You know, who knows if players are going to be fully ready to play? I'm expecting more hamstring pulls and soft tissue injuries because players just aren't in their same routine as they are year in and year out. And then you're going to have positive COVID tests. And, you know, I think that's going to knock players out for 2 weeks. And I wrote an article for Packer Report last week that I said depth, not talent, is going to be the story of the season. And I just think that the teams with the best depth are going to be better suited to handle this potentially crazy season. And I think Tyler Irvin plays a part in that. I don't think many teams have a fourth running back that's as talented as Tyler Irvin. And I think that could really play in the Packers' advantage.
That could be interesting. And I was right. Kenneth Dixon was also in that draft. And, he was one of my biggest draft crushes ever for a late-round running back. He blew out his knees twice, though. So
massive. And I know we're trying to keep it positive about the upcoming season here, but I know we're just talking in a vacuum right now, hoping that all this happens. I'm still floating that idea out there that they should be playing every other week, not every week, just because of this. But anyhow,
but
if we want to try and have a season, but
the Hall of Fame game has been canceled at this point.
Yeah, so. I'm really surprised that they didn't add buffer weeks in. At least before the playoffs or the Super Bowl or things like that, to like be able to reschedule games. I just can't imagine a scenario in which one of a couple things don't happen, where one, you've got like 15 guys on a team that test positive like the day before a game, and now like your entire team needs to be quarantined and the team can't play the game, or that like you're scheduled to have a game in, I don't know, let's just say like Dallas or something, and they have a major outbreak, and the mayor or the state says, hey, we're not allowing any gatherings over 20 people, and right. they can't play a game in that stadium. I'm just shocked that they didn't allow, you know, more off weeks to take place at some point, or some buffer weeks to be able to reschedule games. And that's the part that seems really crazy to me when they put together the schedule in this scenario.
Yeah, I brought this up last week, and I made a snarky comment on
what?
Twitter.
You?
I made a snarky comment on Twitter, John. How about that? But to Jim Widener, a friend of the show, he mentioned something about the demise of the XFL and how it's too bad because the XFL actually looked halfway, despite the quarterback talent, looked halfway decent last spring. It looked like it was going to be something good, yeah. and now it's gone because of COVID. And his question was like, so what is spring ball going to look like going forward? My snarky comment was, well, I guess we'll find out when the NFL season starts in February. Yeah. You know, so I mean, I don't know how this, I mean, it's just this thing with the NBA now already, and it's some of the stuff starting to rear its ugly head. Like you said, what happens if your entire quarterback room gets sick with COVID? Do you just not have a quarterback? Do you keep a quarterback that isn't at team facilities?
That's what I would do with Love. I was actually going to write an article on that. That's what I would do with Jordan Love. I would keep him away from the rest of the quarterbacks. You know, one, he has so much to work on anyway. Two, like, you know, Tim Boyle is more than capable of being the backup quarterback. And it would seem to be such mm-hmm. like an obvious where, like, you know, you're going to need at least two quarterbacks next to each other, learning the plays and running the offense. And then if all of a sudden one of them tests positive, well, you've still got Jordan Love who can go in and play a game if Rodgers and Boyle would both test positive. But who knows what they'll do? It's going to be super crazy.
Maybe this will finally drive expanded rosters, which I've been in favor of for years, because there's no feeder system outside of college football anymore. You know, players, unless they're on a practice squad, which has a real stringent set of rules as to how they can be used and how long they can have been in the NFL. I mean, you can't keep big rosters on anymore. And some teams that have promising seasons just go in the tank because, like everyone says, it's a war of attrition. Well, what happens if you can carry a couple extra? And if your GM is smart enough to bring on five more people that can actually help you down the stretch, I mean, maybe we do that too. Maybe they expand rosters last minute. And some of these free agents that are sitting out there that, you know, don't have jobs that, you know, would be midland to low end, you know, players, you know, backups, you know, we can just keep pools of them to bring them up. I mean, it's going to be, I won't say exciting. It'll be interesting and intriguing to see how they get around this, because football is the sport that is most affected by this just because of the close contact number of people. I mean, we're not supposed to have gatherings over 100 people. Well, you got two teams with how many, you know, over 50 people on each sideline. Well, there you go. There's your gathering of 100 people right there. And what are they going to go do? Spit and lay on each other, you know? So, you know, it's going to be intriguing. So,
yeah. Well, I can tell you, I know that they're going to expand practice squads. I would say that for sure. And that makes the most sense because teams don't have salary cap to use. So a practice squad player is 120K per guy. So you add, you know, four or six more guys, you're still, you're still under a mil to kind of add those guys. What I would, recommend them doing is I would say have your initial cut down in waivers. And then, the teams can claim players like normal. But once you set your practice squad, make it so that other teams can't sign guys off your practice squad.
Thank you. That's what I was just going to say. If we could have guaranteed practice squad people, that would make a big difference, because that's half the problem, is that it's this guessing game as to what's his name down on the Saints? Taysom Hill. You have to float him out there. You can't have him on the team. You're going to float him. Like, let's keep it around so we can, you know, let's have some hard practice squad spots. So your work as a GM and as a scouting department can't just be, I mean, that's been the way it has been with the Packers since we were kids. How many people have gotten other starters off the Packers because they just couldn't keep them on the roster?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think you do that, you end up with about 70 player, 53 man roster, 16 practice squad guys, something like that, and make it a little bit more, so that teams can't sign those guys off and you can actually develop them throughout the course of the season. That should give you a group of about 70 players, you know, that you have to pick from. And I think that would be a lot easier for teams to navigate throughout the season.
Yeah. Right. Sorry, John, I hijacked the show again. It happens.
No. It's fantastic. This is going very well. So, again, thank you, Andy, for joining us for another wonderful week of giving us wonderful insights and helping us to at least form our opinions as we start moving into this season and at least knowing what to look for here. So thank you again for joining us. It's always wonderful to have you.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me, guys. Enjoy your week. And, of course, go Pack, go.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Andy.
All right, and then we'll carry on. The last couple of things we have, we'll just put into our normal last call.
Time to look around and get your bearings. It's time for the last call.
All right, so for our last call, one thing that we did want to talk about is the Brewers have their 45-man roster ready for this shortened July, August, September season that we have. They are carrying 23 pitchers on this roster. They're going to have four catchers. They're going to have 12 infielders and six outfielders.
So is that four catchers as in three active catchers and a bullpen catcher or like active catchers?
It looks like they're trying to keep, I don't know how they're working this because I think the schedule, the stuff they're looking for the roster is going to be a little different because they aren't playing minor league ball. Like there's nobody down there playing games, getting caught up and ready to go.
So
Omar Narvaez, Jacob Nottingham, Manny Pena, David Freitas.
Pineapple.
Yeah.
So it's almost like we were just talking about with Andy a couple minutes ago about the practice squad stuff. Like basically just going to carry some extra people just in, injury, corona, whatever. Okay.
Well, the big thing is, too, is normally baseball has the built-in system. They normally have the built-in. You've got your AAA. You've got your extended roster. Yeah. Normally, it's a 25 roster. You know, you get the 25 roster. You've got extended rosters. You've got guys playing in minor leagues. There's no minor league baseball right now. There's only the major leagues. Yeah. So infielders, we get, Gyorko, Hira, Arcia, Brock Holt, Justin Smoke, Sogard, Ryan Healy, Mark Mathias, Logan Morrison, Jace Peterson, Ronnie Rodriguez, and Luis Urias. So those are the infielders they've got there. The pitchers, there's 23 different pitchers here. Obviously, you got Peralta, Woodruff, Brad Anderson, Corbin Burns, Alex Claudio, Hader, Hauser, Knebel, Lindblom, Shelby Miller, Mike Morin, Drew Rasmussen, Justin Grimm, some of the other names on there. So yeah, the outfield is where you already kind of know what you've got there because it's Keon Broxton, Lorenzo Cain, Braun, Gamel, Avisail Garcia, and Christian Yelich.
Yeah,
there's less of a there's not a Jace Peterson sort of guy in that group. There's guys who you're like, we were hoping to get all these guys in. And the other thing is, one of those guys can bat DH and just keep
I was going to say, Yelich is a serviceable right fielder, but do you just have him DH?
I'd put Braun in DH because Braun is made of
great.
I don't know.
Great point. Sorry. That was, sorry.
I was trying to think of an easily breakable thing, but I didn't get to it quickly. Braun.
Sorry,
he's made only of soft tissue. I think. I don't know.
That is held together by illegal chain molecules.
In fairness, the steroids are the thing that helped him heal enough to actually play 150 games out of 162. That dude gets hurt a lot, and
true story.
Keeping his bat in the lineup and not making him play the field is something that can definitely help. You put Avisail Garcia out there, get him and Kane and Yelich, and you can bring Gamel in when you need to every now and then, and you can just maybe even give Braun an entire day off and put Yelich in that spot and let Gamel and Garcia take out those spots.
Their outfield is a good place. It's just like you said too. That's why it popped into my head about just getting Yelich out of the field altogether because he's your prized possession. but yeah, you're right. I mean, Bronny at this point is just a bat. You don't want him in the field either as much as possible. So, Hey, so what I was thinking about this, so I know that we all have the DH rule now. Was there any, did they actually institute any, I mean, I should be up on this, but I'm not. Did they institute any rules on how long you can use a pitcher for, or is it still favorable rules for counsel?
I haven't seen this, but I'm trying to think of how purist you are on baseball, and we'll get the answer right here. In the 10th inning, you will start with a runner on second, Aaron. Your thoughts?
Fine with it.
I guess I don't care that much either. It's like, both teams have it.
No, so because extra inning games are nothing. And the thing is, too, is that extra inning games always seem to happen like on game three, which is supposed to be the flyaway game, you know, or just it's always bad timing when you get that 16 inning game, that 17 inning game. And it does nobody any good. It just burns up your bullpen. It burns up. Eventually, you'll end up having to pull a starter off the bench, or the next day you have to tell a starter, sorry, dude, you're doing 8 innings today. I don't care how bad you get shelled, you know, so make it good. I'm fine with that. I heard that rule brought up a couple years back, and they were starting to do it in the minor leagues. And like, what was it? Like 90% of games are done by the end of the 11th inning. I'm fine with that. You know, we don't need games stretching until 2 o'clock in the morning. It does nobody any good, you know? Yeah. So I'm more purist than a lot of people. Like, I don't think we should have a shot clock on the pitch, on the pitcher. I think you should be able to substitute as much as you want, like counsel does, because that's strategy. However, as long as everybody gets the runner at second base in extra innings, then that's fine. You know, it's because nobody works on strategy of extra innings. Extra innings happen and people react.
That's just attrition. Yeah,
I mean, nobody goes through their head, well, what am I going to do in the 10th inning after, you know, I burn up my closer? You know, it's just like, well, here we go. All right, everybody back on the field. I mean, I know there's probably, they're professionals, so they're more than that. But it just seems like extra innings is just always, and extra innings are always just, it's just the doldrums too. Like, will there be 3 innings where neither team does anything because it's midnight on the West Coast, you know? Yeah. So yeah, I'm all in favor of the runner at second base. I think it's great. I think that is maybe one of the better rules that they could institute just for player safety, because when they're not on the field, they're not getting hurt. They're not tired. They're not overly fatigued. It makes sense. And you know what? The purists who are like, we can't do this, stuff it.
I guess my big thing is like, anybody who's, I mean, I don't want to change anything that happens in regulation. You know, like those things are different, like for football or basketball, or like in regulation, you know, the game is the game. But once you get to the extra inning thing, you're finding a way to just break a tiebreaker. It can be anything. I mean, like people who get really mad about penalty kicks in soccer, that is literally the most exciting part of a soccer game. Because the rest of it is people trying not to score for 90 minutes, it seems.
Well, and they try for 10 of those minutes. And has been brilliant with a 3-on-3 for 5 minutes. Okay, so you don't want to go straight to a shootout. Okay, we'll give each team a chance to win it fair and square, but you're only going to get 3 players on each side.
Which
and a goalie.
Is crazy hockey, by the way.
It is. It's so the fun. Best to watch. It's the best to watch. Now, there's some people that say that's not good because then you're throwing your starters back out there and you're just running them raw for 5 straight minutes because you're trying to get that goal. I get
Nobody
it.
Nobody plays
but, I mean,
for
at
5
least
straight,
But at least it's not just a shootout. But, you know, at least in like in hockey, too, hockey's smart. Like, you still get a point if you lose in overtime or if you lose in the shootout, right?
Once you get to overtime, you get a point. So you've got a point by getting there. So you're fine once you're there. You try to win because you don't lose. It used to be that you only got a point if it was a tie, so you would play to not lose the point. So now people just play to win because you already got the point, which is nice.
Right, exactly. But, I mean, at the same time, you're not punished for having
for
a
trying
tie.
To
so
win.
You're right. Yeah. As long as, you know, in the NFL, you know, has been continually changing. I mean, sudden death overtime used to be the dumbest thing on earth. Like, you kicked and then, oh, the other team went down the field, kicked a field goal. Great. My team never got to see the field, you know? So I still think I much prefer to see a college overtime in the NFL.
I agree.
But just
people get
just
all mad that there's no kickoff
because it's
like,
more even
ground
because I mean, still, if the other team still scores a touchdown, it should just be each team gets at least one possession in overtime. Yeah. I mean, not score a touchdown, then you don't get it. No, that means that you let the coin flip, you know, basically choose the game, you know. So I still think it should be one full possession for both teams. And then after both teams have possession, if they both kicked a field goal or they both kicked, scored a touchdown, then it's sudden death at that point, you know. Well, but
I'd say, I mean, like either the college rules or if you're going to be really purist about it, say we're going to play a 10-minute period, score whatever you can. Give them a whole extra period, not sudden death. Just say, like, play an extra period. If nobody scores, mm-hmm. it's a tie. If both of you score a touchdown, it's a tie. If one of you scores and the other one doesn't, then you win, you know, or whatever. Just, you right. know, don't give them a full quarter again, but give them 10 right. minutes so you know that nobody takes it. I mean, if you right. can take a 10-minute drive and force it to be a 10-minute drive, then good on you, you win it.
And that's why I like this runner at second base. That's ingenuity because it's a fair playing field for both teams. Both yeah. teams have the same scenario. You get a runner at second base. It's perfect. I mean, it's one of the better rules that's been, you know, because our games haven't changed, you know, football's changed the most, to be perfectly yeah. honest. But fundamentally, you know, baseball, hockey, basketball, basketball. This has had some major fundamental changes with massive like three point line and letting stars no take 5 steps on yeah. the basket. But, but hockey. But for the most part, you know, fundamentally, our sports are all the same. They follow the same rules that have been around since the dawn of modern sports.
Yeah.
But this one's one of the better, like, just new rules. Like hockey's overtime rules thing. That's been very progressive.
Very good.
I mean, yeah. I hate Batman, but damn.
yeah,
like, that's he's
but it
he's,
works. It's that part. I mean, you gotta give him credit where credit's due on that part at least. So
yeah. Well, he understands his sport's dying and he's trying to make changes to get people to like his sport.
Move we're a team base, to Wisconsin
make where baseball happen. Almost buried a season.
Yeah, just because. Very close too. But you know, at least Wendy's happy, and that makes me happy. So yeah, the last thing we'll cover here is they came out with the NBA schedule. Every team's playing 8 games. So of course, remember the Bucks. You know, for those of you who don't recall, all the way back when in the before times, in the long ago,
before the COVID winter of our discontent,
the Bucks were up and are up 6.5 games on Toronto, right. And then. Well, they've clinched it for the other teams. So the only team that can catch them for the race for the one seed in the East is Toronto, 6.5 games back with 8 to play. The Bucks will open up with the Celtics, and then they will play the Rockets. Mm-hmm. I guess the Bucks are designated the home team in the first game and the road team in the second one. Although they're playing at HP Fieldhouse in Orlando, then the arena at Wide World of Sports, Visa Athletic Center. ESPN, Wide World of Sports.
So as the home team, do they slap a makeshift logo for your team on there? And when you get the ball, they turn up the volume so it sounds like it's home court. And then at the halves, you get to decide which direction you want to kick into the wind or not.
they shoot Bucks from the giant cannon thing just into the stands where nobody is watching.
I can't let this one go. I just heard a stand-up comedian the other day. I can't think of his name. They were talking about how they were at someone. One of the teams was shooting. Chipotle had the Chipotle was doing the bit at between the quarters, and they were shooting Chipotle burritos out of the t-shirt gun up into the stands. And how it just went massively wrong because people were like reaching up and like grabbing as it went past and they would just explode behind them. Anyhow.
All right. So Celtics.
It killed Maude Flanders. I mean, we should not have t-shirts.
Oh, yes. Rockets. Then they get the Nets, Heat, Mavericks, Raptors, the Wizards, and then the Grizzlies to end it out. So the Bucks win 2 of them. They're the one seed in the East. They just got to win 2 games. For what they have left here. So, yeah, it's at least something, and it'll at least give him a chance to get warmed up. Like Giannis has talked about, he doesn't own a court. He doesn't have a place to have that. So it's good to get this team ready and get them back and in some kind of flow, because that's definitely an important part of what they've got to do moving forward here.
No, and it's interesting, too, because we talked about that last week. I think we talked about that last week when Noonan and Wendy were on. Yep. But like a lot of NBA players have their own courts at home. Well, Giannis is still pretty relatively new to having a whole bunch of money.
He isn't even the big contract yet.
Yeah. I mean, So
the way that it's set up, by the way,
you know,
the Bucks, Raptors, Celtics, Heat, Pacers, and Sixers have all clinched at this point. So I believe it's just the Nets, the Magic, and the Wizards are the only teams still in from the East, if I remember correctly. And so, yeah, the Bucks do get to play the Nets and the Wizards if they can just beat the 7th and 9th place teams in the East, who both have losing records. Yeah. The Wizards are 5 games out of the 8th spot, right? Well, 5.5 games out of the 8th spot. They're 24 mm-hmm. and 40. If they go on a tear here, maybe they pass the Magic and get that 8th seed.
Right.
How great would that be?
I know it's a little bit more than that. It's a little bit about fairness and, you know, like allowing those teams that actually were close to the playoffs on potentially getting in. But it seemed like that number was arbitrarily came up with on how many games back they were just to make sure that the Pelicans got in. So Zion Williams was playing. So,
They had to pick eight,
which I can't blame them. They're a star based league. Like, I understand why they would do it. You could have just done, I mean, so at least this gives them time to play games. But I guess, like, so teams like, sorry, which team was eight games back?
You just have to be within 8 games. So, yeah, the Wizards and then the Magic are both right there. And, yeah, so the Raptors are 6.5 back of the Bucks. The Celtics are 9.5 back with 8 to play. So,
right.
Bucks no, may one or
team,
two.
Which team did you say was dead last in the East that has to go on a tear to get in? Sorry.
Oh, the Wizards. They're the 9th team. The Hornets are 10th, and they're out because they can't catch. Right. They're 7.5.
So what happens when the Wizards lose their first game eliminated? Do we just call it a night?
They'll just keep playing that thing. I think they also said there's going to be a play-in for the 8th spot, so it's mostly just so they have a chance to play some games before.
No, I understand. They have it. I understand. It's just like what's the motive? They have to. I mean, if there is a playing game, that makes sense. And so I'm sorry, I haven't deep dived as much as I should have. But what's the inspiration to keep that 9th seed playing hard against your team? Or are they just going to lay an egg or go home because we don't want to get sick? So I guess as long as there's a playing game, that makes sense. So all right,
I think there is. I mean, the West is the one where they're going to have a whole lot more issues because. They've got several teams in who are not currently technically in the playoffs. They've got a lot more teams who are closer in on that A spot because the Grizzlies are 18 back. So 3.5 back of them are Trailblazers and Pelicans and Kings. 4 games back from them are the Spurs. 6 games back are the Suns. It's like, geez. And then there's the Timberwolves who are forever back.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, I mean, within that 8th seed spot, though, there's within 6 games, there's all the way down to the 13th team in the West is still somewhere in that hunt. So, yeah. And the top 6 teams there are already clinched as well. So, yeah. It'll be interesting, remember,
the only reason why we're doing any of this is because of money, because otherwise their season would just be starting in November anyways. So, yeah. But... It is what it is. We'll see how far it gets. We're getting to the end of the show now. I kind of alluded to it a little bit when Andy was on, but I'm becoming more and more negative, with how the spiking has happened here recently. And, you know, everyone would say, you know, they're young, healthy players, which, you know, they are.
In Florida.
Yeah. But when we start losing, and that's what I alluded to with Andy with the NFL and now with the NBA here, what happens when a whole team just gets wiped out because they all test positive? Do you just start forfeiting games? What happens when the Lakers have 7 of their 13 starters test positive game 3 of the West Finals? Do they just lose? Or do we postpone everything till the Lakers are all healthy again?
I don't know what they do.
We'll find out. I said this last week during the podcast too. It's like the NFL is going to go full blown in, and 3 weeks in, 75% of the players are going to test positive for COVID. And then what do? Just start postponing 2 weeks at a crack?
Well, just play terrible football. They're going to make you play terrible football, and you're going to deal with it. That's what we know.
Well, that's why I should be in charge. I said the NFL should play every other week.
Yeah. Huh? I'm with you.
They really should. That's 14 Aaron days between each one, and everybody plays on Sunday. There's no Monday night. There's no Thursday night. Everyone plays Sunday, and then by the next Sunday, that's 14 days.
All right. No, that's not a terrible idea.
I mean, the season goes to April, but But, you know, it's, I get it goes from 16 weeks to 32 weeks, but, you know, which is over half a year, you know, which is, but at the same time, it gives a lot of play, that gives players more time to heal, you know, stuff like that. I don't know. Like, I was trying to think in my head, like, how could you schedule it? So, like, you had a certain amount of teams playing this week and then, like, alternate two week. And then, like, could you have just an NFC schedule and an AFC schedule and throw out the cross interdivision games and, like, only NFC teams play each other week one? AFC plays week two, NFC plays week three, AFC plays week four, you know?
Yeah, that could easily be done. Just, yeah, avoid that. You could take four games off the schedule, but just not playing inter-conference games would be an easy thing to do.
And then just push back the scheduling formula to next year. So the schedule that's already been determined for this year will be next year's schedule for 2021. And then this year we're going to have the COVID schedule.
Yeah. Just treat this is going to just be a weird year and admit it. All right. Is really all we have time for, Aaron.
Every week and it'd be, really oh my God, it'd be 50 weeks long. Okay. Oh, that's bad. Yeah. Never mind. That was a terrible idea.
No, you're good. Don't worry about it. Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining us again, especially to our wonderful friends overseas, our friends in the UK and Germany. And of course, my favorite, unknown, for whatever reason, Podbean.
Hello, Bulgaria. That, we love yous.
Yeah. We had also our first listener from Ecuador. That makes me very excited. So thank you again, everybody, though, for joining us. It's been another interesting week and a great week to have Andy Herman come in and save us and teach us. And remember to follow him at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Scotty Johnny Pod. You can follow me, Jonathan Barnett, at Not So Humble Host. And Aaron is at Cheddar Talk. We didn't do that at the top, but remember, at Not So Humble Host. And at Cheddar Talk. Cheddar, like the cheese. Cheese. Eat cheese with your mouth. Use your mouth to talk. Talk, talk. Cheddar talk.
You sounded like me.
I know. It was amazing, wasn't it?
Like, Andy agreed with me this year. Did you hear that?
That was good.
I got him to agree with me on like three things. It was awesome.
And remember, of course, you can find us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and much, much more. Wherever it is that you find us and download us, please remember to subscribe, download, listen, rate, and review us. The review, of course, and the rating should be 5 stars. And, of course, the most important part is download. All right, and thank you again for another wonderful week. We will see you soon, whether you are on the town or on the go, or whether you're staying home. Just remember, it is always on Wisconsin.
Wear a mask.
This has been the Scotty Johnny Podcast. Remember to find the boys on Twitter at ScottyJohnny1 or online at ScottyJohnny.com. Thanks for listening, and on Wisconsin.